This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor, and I welcome Germanicus, Michael Vlahos of Johns Hopkins, as we address the wind of the Ukraine war in the 21st century. The wind blows two details. The first detail is called full mobilization. I read from a column by Roger Boyce in the London Times in these last days. Vladimir Putin's existential decision, the gamble of his life, writes Mr. Boyce, is whether to declare a general mobilization of able-bodied Russian men. It would mark the end of the pretense that Moscow is running a special operation. Mr. Boyce continues, Putin has been reluctant to take that step. Tsar Nicholas II ordered a general mobilization of Russia July 30, 1914. 2 days later, Germany declared war on Russia and the die was cast, not just for bloodshed, but also domestic upheaval and revolution at home. In modern times, general mobilization raises the possibility of stop the war movement, of Kremlin infighting, of martial law style measures, and with no guarantee that it will be successful. The second detail blowing in on the wind, Germanicus, is a cogent and lengthy column by Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal editorial page that the tactical nuclear weapon option is available to Vladimir Putin, that he is not reluctant to use it because he does not believe the response would be strategic nuclear weapons by the United States or by NATO. It would, however, augment his what said to be inadequate troop deployment in the east of Ukraine and lead to, you'd have to admit it, a world shock, which would reestablish a Putin at the center of the war, the way full mobilization would reestablish Putin at the center of a restart. But let's take them one at a time. Full mobilization, is that an option that is attractive to winning this conflict? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. There is a difficulty with approaching the term of art full mobilization as though it was some sort of monolithic trope. And in fact, it is very contextually contingent on what zeitgeist you are referring to. So general mobilization, and you did mention the Tsar in 1914, general mobilization in 1914 in the context of religious nationalism and the idea of nations fighting nations with all of their young men on the front, in the trenches, on the battlefield, is long gone now. And general mobilization today would be a kind of existential signal of desperation. So let's say that, you know, as these commentators are so powerfully voicing and so certain of in their citations, let's say that Putin did declare general mobilization. It would indicate that Russia's in an all-out war. And that could happen. I mean, in some ways, it is in an all-out war with the West and NATO, not with the whole world, only about 40 countries out of 120 plus. But nonetheless, that's a solid block of nations. Now, is it at war to the death in a way that would require general mobilization? I don't see that. And of course, to have to fall back on a general mobilization, there would have to be a sense that Russia is really in something close to extremis on the battlefield. And although the entirety, it seems, of Western media is convinced that Russia is losing the war, from everything I see and people whom I have the highest respect for, like Doug McGregor, and then people within Russia, the situation looks extremely different. In fact, I would say, given everything that I'm seeing in terms of the battlefield situation, that the Russian Federation is not very far from achieving its ultimate goals. Now, the fact is that it's a grinding attrition combat at this point. But then after the early losses that the Russian Federation took in its extremely risky put it out there gambits, the thunder runs it did into Kiev and Kharkov, I mean, and the landing of airborne troops unsupported at the Kiev airport, all that was extremely risky, put forces at great vulnerability, tanks charging down the road because the terrain was too boggy and muddy for them to properly approach, tanks going in unsupported by infantry and artillery. All of that led to losses that could have been predicted from a determined foe. Now, the Russians were hoping that the Ukrainian foe is not determined. It was determined. It was intensely determined, and it was on the defensive. It was on grounds of its own choosing. It was in a position where the Russians were exposed. And plus, they were getting incredible real-time NATO intelligence that we were feeding them. So they could see everything, and the Russians were not in a situation that they were familiar with. It was a very bad scene. And of course, that gambit collapsed pretty quickly. And then once the Russians had lost steam, they reassessed. And in fact, you know, there were actual upsides, I mean, from having charged into Kiev and elsewhere in the north. It meant that Ukrainian forces were split between north, south, and east. And so the Russians were actually able to make incredibly good gains in the south, moving up from Crimea and then ultimately into Donbas. And what you have today is a situation where, having reassessed, shifted forces to focus and concentrate on the offensives in Donbas, what we're seeing is a situation where Ukrainian forces are being ground down.
All right, let's look at the second detail coming in on the wind, which is tactical nuclear weapons. There are thousands of them. I believe the U.S. has, I'm said to be, between 200 and 500 gravity bombs to be used in Europe, NATO. The Soviet army bequeathed their tactical nuclear weapons to the Russian army, and there are said to be thousands deployed on short-range missiles, something like our army prepared in the 1950s. In any event, the debate, as I understand it, is that tactical nuclear weapon, the use of one, is something that the Russian army regards as practical if and when the circumstances are correct. That would offset the stalemate that seems to be, have developed in and around the Dnieper River Valley. Do you believe that Mr. Putin is in a position to use a TAC nuke to make the point that he means to win?
Well, he's in a position to do that hypothetically. But if you were to examine the actual doctrine that the Russians have put out there in terms of when they would use a tactical nuclear weapon as a kind of, you know, demonstration, escalation to de-escalate, none of those circumstances attain. In other words, Russian doctrine, however much it entertains very risky actions with nuclear weapons, would only entertain such actions if it felt that the situation was out of control and they were facing defeat. And none of that attains. And if Russians wish to achieve their goals in Donbas, I would argue that they are doing that right now with the massive artillery that they're focusing on Ukrainian forces. And I have to say, just as a sidebar, that Ukraine has lost most of its armored forces, artillery, and aircraft. And they are in a very difficult and uniquely desperate situation in which there is no coming back. And so if one were to say that the Russians might even want to consider using nuclear weapons, that would seem to me a foolish entertainment. The fact is that the Russians weren't able to get their way in Donbass and destroy the core of the Ukrainian army, which is what they're doing right now, they have plenty of super heavy conventional weapons, thermobaric weapons, the so-called father of all bombs. These are very big, powerful, earth penetrator, as they are styled often, vacuum bombs that have enormous localized effect, and they have plenty of delivery systems to lay those down if they need to. But that isn't what's happening right now. I mean, just from all the reports I'm seeing from that part of the front, Ukraine is doing very, very poorly, and as they would when subjected to enormous volume of heavy artillery fire. Now, we have to remember that the Ukraine, with NATO assistance, had 8 years to fortify the Donbas front. It's a fairly big front. It looks a lot like the Western Front in terms of its length and depth. And all of those fortifications have to be blown apart. And that's what's been going on. But when it's all done, then it's done. And once the Donbas is under Russian control, extending to the Dnieper, to the Zaporizhian area, to Kherson, that's essentially sufficient for Russia achieving its objectives. There's no desire on the part of Russia to try and occupy Ukraine, especially given the fact that Ukraine has put up such a spirited resistance and has clearly emerged, at least when it comes to, you know, central and western Ukraine, emerged as a completely separate national identity. Now, eastern Ukraine is still Russian in its orientation. So I think what we're looking at, if the war were allowed to end at some point, is a partition of Ukraine. And the question is, will the West allow such a culmination and resolution of the conflict? If it does not, then yes, it's possible that the war could continue to escalate over time into a place where we would be looking at a world war with the Russian Federation. Under those circumstances, yes, Russia would mobilize. Under those circumstances, yes, there would be the specter of nuclear use. And yet there is no real need for the war to move inexorably in the path of escalation that we saw in the 20th century in those terrible world wars. There's nothing that is required of either side to turn this into a human world catastrophe. And so if the U.S. wants to project onto Russia the kind of paranoia that would create a nice narrative of how Russia is escalating, when in fact it is the United States that continues to push this war, and its leaders have openly stated that the goal of the war now is to defenestrate Mr. Putin, is to destroy Russian military power so that it is so degraded it can never be a threat again. These are all things that are not simply escalatory. They're, again, existential in nature.
Existential. They are existential. Germanicus, examining the two details coming in on the wind about Ukraine conflict in the 21st century, full mobilization for Russia, which has a poetic history, and tactical nuke, the first time a nuclear weapon would have been used in anger since 1945, which was the only time a nuclear weapon used in anger, to our knowledge. We're going on to the theater. We sacrifice Augustus, the divine Augustus. Tonight, I'm told, Germanicus and I discussed this, there will be a tableau, not a full production, of the Trojan Women, which is superior, a drama, because it is about the degradation of the Trojan women. Their husbands are dead, they're defeated, they're carried off, they've been abused by the Greeks, and the gods are not pleased with the Greeks. I'm never pleased with the Greeks because there's always some lesson. Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. Gaius is John Batchelor. This is Londinium 90 AD. By the Thames, we put down our cups of wine and, like good Roman citizens, trundle on to sacrifice. Thank you.